Welcome back to the Trackster podcast, brought to you by Soar Running. Now, we've been friends with Soar for a very long time, dating back to when they first entered the running apparel space. And it's safe to say that if you don't know, get to know, because when it comes to Soar kit, you quickly realize how high level it really is. Now, I've personally been running in the gear for years now, and if I'm looking for the best quality running kit out there, Soar are well up there on my list. Now, we're very grateful at Trackster that we've teamed up with them and they're supporting myself in the build to the Manchester Marathon, which is in just 2 days' time. We're nearly there, people. I am knee-deep in the taper and crying out for a carbohydrate. And I'm going to be bringing you exclusive sponsored content from this weekend and, of course, the race result. Fingers crossed for a PB. That's all I'm going to say on the matter. Now, on the show today, I'm having a chat with the Chief Marketing Officer at Soar, Mr. Rob Wilson. Now, Rob's been running for donkey's years now, fresh off a superb bronze medal with Highgate Harriers at the recent National 12-stage road relays in Sutton Park. And I chat to Rob about all things running, the apparel scene, innovation, and why Soar is just that good. And for you listeners, I address the question that I always get about Soar kit. Why is it so expensive? Now, as a thank you to our loyal listeners, we have a discount code which you can find in the description of this episode, and that's going to get you 15% off the entire Soar website. If you'd like to follow along with what we're doing at Trackster and this podcast, please do head over to Instagram and drop us a follow. And please do also check out our YouTube channel. That's where we upload shoe reviews, training sessions, athletics news, and race coverage. And finally, to support the show, please do leave us a review, which is now available on all platforms. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Rob. All right, welcome to the show, Rob. How are we, mate? How are we?
Not too bad at all. Not too bad at all. How are you?
Yeah, you know, mate. I'm all right. You know, a few days out from the marathon. Try to keep me head. But, you know, it's raining outside. Pretty standard weather, really, isn't it? You know, bleak Wednesday.
The sun's finally come out here in Old Street. I've only been waiting 4 months or so for it, but there's a little bit peaking out.
And you must be off a bit of a high, mate, at the weekend. Highgate getting the bronze medal in such, I mean, how would you describe that finish?
Thrilling. Finish for the ages. Podium battle like no other. I couldn't bear to watch, actually. So last leg, our man, Charles Cooper, who's probably not on the radars of a lot of folk in this country, but he's got some serious pedigree. He's a former American schoolboy 2 mile champ, so he's got serious wheels. He was hunted down by Cambridge and Coleridge on the final leg. And they came into the home straight, the famous sort of uphill drag, 30 seconds or so uphill drag at Sutton Park, neck and neck. And he had enough. I think it was a little bit of a sit and kick, whereas obviously Cambridge had to work super hard. And yeah, the agony and ecstasy. But I was backed by keeper's pull. I'd given up. My heart had sunk, and I thought we were doomed. So I couldn't bear to watch. So I've just been watching all the videos back.
Yeah, because the fella from Cambridge, he ran one of the fastest short legs of the day, I think.
It was the fastest. Yeah, it was the fastest. He was absolutely flying. I mean, he was eating up the ground. It was a great run, to be fair.
I mean, really, you wouldn't want anyone to have that last kick than a 2 miler champ or a 2 miler from an NCAA or whatnot. You know, someone that's got those wheels. How would you have fared yourself in that situation, Rob?
I not very well, put it that way. It's funny, actually, because I'm sure Jens, who was running for us, won't thank me for reminding everyone, but a couple of years ago, back in 2022, we had quite a big lead, and it got eaten up by Ben Murphy of Tonbridge on the final leg. And he broke our man by keeper's pull in the end, but it's heartbreaking for that guy that's on last leg. He got all the opportunity for ecstasy, but agony's just around the corner as well. So yeah, I think it's kept that 2022 race has kept Ben Poche awake probably for best part of 750 days since. So when he knew we had a proper middle distance man at Highgate, which we're not known for, he was earmarked for leg 12.
And we're going to talk all things Highgate club athletics and your running journey, but also we're going to get into some Soar chat later on in this episode. But The National Road Relays is such a constitution. It's such an incredible event over the ages. You know, even before our time, you know, you think of some of the great runners that have gone through that race, and Highgate are really a pillar of that event and what it stands for. How would you say your outlook and opinion on that National Road Relays is today compared to how it was 10 years ago?
That's a good question. So 10 years ago, I was just actually just joining Highgate. I'd been at Ealing, Southland, Middlesex. I'm West London boy, so it's from Ealing originally, and I moved to Highgate. And really quite quickly, it became clear that for us at Highgate, the 12 stage was an event that we could really use as a vehicle to build collectivism, to get collective buy-in, and to drag the whole group upwards together. Because as you know, if you're going to get a strong 12 stage team out, you probably need best part of 20 athletes vying for that competition, illness, injury, backups, holidays, weddings, you name it. There's all sorts of reasons why people fall off. So to get 12 good men, you probably need 20 in the mix, and that's just for an A team. So if you want to take a B team, which we do and a few of the other big clubs do, you're probably looking at best part of 35, 40 runners going for those 24 places. So I think for us and for me, what it's been is a chance to take good club runners, but not necessarily the best, not guys that are going to win international fairs, certainly, but give them the chance, just give them the carrot of being a national champion or a national medalist, and doing so with your comrades, essentially, doing so with the people that you're there on a Tuesday night in December or a Saturday morning in early January when training is hard. You know what it's like. Most of the year, running is just putting in the hard work, putting in the miles, getting out of bed or going after work to a track session. And it just gave us, it's just given us shared purpose and shared vision. And it's connected the club and it's connected the men's group at Highgate like nothing else. And it's also allowed us to make champions and heroes of some of our stronger runners. You know, people like a Jacob Allen, Alex LaPetra, Roger Pullman, those guys who can put down a big log leg. It's allowed us to celebrate them and have them as our heroes in our North London bubble.
And Highgate fosters such a team ethos. It's easy to look at some of the individuals that you've got, or even from a team perspective, and think, oh, you know, they're all elites because they're so fast. But in actual fact, I'd disagree. I'd say you don't foster an elitism attitude at all. I'd say it's very homegrown. It's very grassroots. And obviously that is then reflected well in the night of the 10K PBs event. I've seen also a lot of clubs in sort of coming out of COVID foster a similar team ethos, and the results are speaking for themselves. And one club is Wimbledon. They've got that core group now of runners that turn up three times a week together. They run in the mornings together before work, and it's now paying dividends in results like the Surrey League and the National Road Relays as well. Where does that team ethos come from at Highgate during your time? Is it just something that's just been there for a long time, or has it grown recently?
No, it's definitely, I think it's at zenith now. And I think there's still, there's still a lot of runway for it to grow. But really, you can't talk about Highgate and Highgate senior men without mentioning Ben Poetry. I think a lot of the listeners will know who Ben is and familiar that he's the man behind night the 10,000 metre PBs. And as in many ways, actually revolutionised the sport in the UK. And I know that sounds very, a grand comment to make for one bloke, but I really think it's true, because without things like Night of the 10Ks and the way that's trickled across to other meets, it's set a new benchmark for what's possible. So really you need one person. You need someone that's going to just absolutely lead the charge, and it's going to be relentless in their desire to build something. So my time at Highgate, it's been Ben Poetry saying, we're going to do something here, lads. And I'm going to lead from the front, and I'm going to cajole, and I'm going to have quiet words in the ear when it's needed, arm around the shoulder when it's needed. It's a mix of Arsene Wenger and Neil Warnock, really. It's a little bit of everything. Depending what's needed and the runner and athlete in question. So it's about one individual leading the charge and having a relentless belief in it. And then beyond that, it's over to the individuals, and it's over to the people that are part of that team, and collective responsibility, really. Appreciating that you're sharing something that's quite special. It won't last forever. You know, we're all going to get older and slower, and the sport's going to change. But really, making sure that you're all accountable to one another, and you all know that really this is the joy of the sport, being able to train hard together, race hard together, win together, lose together. So yeah, that's it's really about that collectivism, and you know, you and I have been running and been in the sport for a long time. I'd really think that, and this is super cliche, but I think social media has actually been a force for good in terms of allowing people to just understand what others are doing and relate to other people and identify with other people in a way that 15 years ago when I was starting out, it was really, really hard to know, okay, where are people going for runs? Where are they training? Who is running before work? How can I just, you know, arrange a to meet up with someone for a tempo run, or how can I see what other people, you know, who's doing what intervals this week, and maybe we can jump in for little bits of it. It was much more rigid and static, and things like Strava, WhatsApp groups, they've allowed us to just be much more connected. And I think that connectivity, both inter club and intra club, so, you know, here in London, we've obviously got lots of friendly rivalries, from Cottage to Highgate to Hercules Wimbledon to some of the lads from Belgrave or Victoria Park. We're kind of training together, racing together. We're definitely part of a scene, if you like, which I don't know, maybe it did exist 20 years ago, but I kind of don't think it was as prominent.
And now, Rob, working for SOAR, and you've been a sort of pinnacle part of their journey to where they are today. You're not only well in with the club scene from a Highgate perspective in London, and as you say, that scene, I have to agree, yeah, it's something unique. Where I match it up with like Power League football, five-a-side, where you've got all these different group of lads, but a lot of them know each other, they're all playing against each other, but ultimately they want the best for each other. But on the day, there is that rivalry, which just fosters the most amazing feeling if you are amongst that. But back to SOAR, Rob, so how did you know, talk to us about your sort of occupational history, I guess, up to the point you joined SOAR. Is this the first time you've ever worked in the running industry, or, you know, what's that journey look like?
No, it's not. I did something which I'm sure relates to a lot of folk listening, which is got a job in a running shoe shop many years ago now, showing my age a little bit, but this would have been sort of 2009. I got a job at Runners Need in Camden Town in London. Now Runners Need now is a sort of fairly big, well-known national retailer, but at the time it was independent bricks and mortar. I think we're 5 or 6 stores in London, but, you know, small specialist one-on-one service, gait analysis, the classic model of the sort of 1990s, early 2000s, staffed by runners for runners, fairly geeky, I suppose. And I loved it. I loved just chewing the fat off people all day and every day about running, selling shoes, getting people on the treadmill, talking about what they're, you know, what their training goals were, what they were aiming to do at a marathon, or maybe they'd come in and they'd have a bit of an injury or they'd have some frustrations. I really, really enjoyed that. Talk about running all day. And then I got a job doing something completely different, despite loving that. And I kind of thought, wow, I've got to do something. I've got to get off of the shop floor, which again, I think is something that a lot of people, you know, a lot of people get to that stage in life where they want to do something that maybe challenges them in a different way. And for one reason or another, I ended up in business media and events and content, nothing to do with running at all. Actually finished up working in renewable energy, but I always had this yearning for wanting to get back into the space. And, you know, in the 2015, 2016, the running market certainly wasn't quite as buoyant as it is now. The opportunities weren't as great, but you're starting to get brands like SOAR and a few others take off and get traction, and they came on my horizon. And then via a couple of introductions with friends, I got to know Tim SOAR, the founder of SOAR, and talked my way into a job, essentially. Cross-sold my skills and my experiences, a little bit of a business generalist, skills in marketing and project management and content and copy and things like that, alongside my experience in running, and said, like, yeah, I want to go on this journey. I want to be part of things. And I was really fortunate to be employee number two here at SOAR. Well, Tim SOAR as the founder, there was James who joined the business in 2015, and then I joined in 2017. And that's how I got there. And it's been a great 7 years since.
And what is your role today within SOAR?
So today I'm head of marketing, or chief marketing officer, depending on how grand I'd like to sound. But as you can imagine, we're not a ginormous business. We're 10, 11 people. So everyone does a little bit of everything, which is great. You know, I lead the marketing charge, so to speak, and manage a small marketing team here. But You're exposed to so many elements of the business, from right the way from supply chain to serving someone on the shop floor, to reporting to the board, to fundraising, to long-term strategy, to, you know, just copy for emails. And that's brilliant. It's a really dynamic, dynamic workplace.
So from my opinion, I think a lot of our listeners will agree with this statement, is that they're a very cool brand. They get the cool box ticked. I call them cool as fuck, basically. And I feel that SOAR have been a catalyst for other brands to establish. Maybe they were already established, but for brands to come out and go against the grain of your general, we release a running shoe, we sponsor an event, we have elite athletes. That's our brand awareness. Whereas now you're seeing niche little brands from all over the world pop up out of corners you didn't even expect to see. And they may have just apparel. They may only just do hats. They may have socks. They may have whatever it is. But I see these brands pop up and I'm like, I guarantee they've got SOAR on a mood board somewhere in their office space. How has that changed over the 7 years that you've been there? Obviously, being in head of marketing, you're going to be behind so many of the mood boards and, you know, the direction that you guys go in as a brand. How has that changed from when you first entered the business to where you are now as that brand that I looked at as very cool?
Well, firstly, thank you. It's a great question. And I think something I always say to people when I talk about SOAR's history is actually the first 2 or 3 years, think of that as your research and development period. Yeah, sure, you are trading, you are trying to sell stuff, but you're really discovering who you are and what you're about. You find out who your customer is, what resonates with your customer, how you can deliver value to them, how you can tell stories, understanding your positioning in the market or the running ecosystem. So those first 2 or 3 years, it really is figuring things out. And if I think about our products then, I think about our marketing then, our storytelling, our content, I almost cringe, not because it was bad at the time, but just it's light years away from or light years behind, I think, where we are now. How have we changed? We've really understood that our niche, if you like, is racing, and that's where we know we can offer a hell of a lot of value in terms of technicality of products. So our race vests, our marathon shorts, marathon speed shorts, products like that, where they're really unmatched. There's not really anyone that we think can touch us when it comes to fabrication, fit, weight, performance, breathability, and things like that on race day. So we've really, really lent into that. And I think coming from a position of truth has been really important to us. We're all runners, we're all racers, we're all living and breathing this scene. And I think that matters a lot. I think if you can speak to your audience, and for us, that audience is people who are performance orientated, and that can mean anything. It's everyone can have a performance metric. It doesn't matter if you're running a 5-6 hour marathon or you're shooting for 2:10, 2:15. Performance is very personal. I think we can tell that story. And I think we're also really fortunate that because we're not a ginormous business, because we haven't got big chains of command, we're able to be quite agile. And I know, you know, people always say that we're in a small business, you're agile, but it really is true. If we want to do something, we can, you know, budgets notwithstanding, we can pretty much do it. And we almost see it as our opportunity, if you like, to just keep being on the front foot, keep pushing boundaries, be it in the way we shoot product, the way we tell stories, the way we work with people. We can be creative because we're not beholden to, you know, massive corporate structures.
SOAR have been very consistent with being about performance and race day, not just through their product, but through their various marketing ways, i.e. working with clubs in England and the UK, working with various groups that are fixated on racing and doing the best that they can. I suppose my question is that I see SOAR being worn now for all runners. You know, if a runner's turning up on a marathon start line, they're going for a 6-hour marathon PB, but that's what they want to run, they may wear SOAR. How have you overcome that challenge of not being elitist? Because just listening to you there, talking about the importance of performance in the company's values, if you then put that value on anything else, any other industry within running, whether it's coaching, nutrition, whatever, as soon as you add that word performance, there's always that elitism stigma around it. How have SOAR overcome that challenge and avoided it?
It's a great question. It's something we thought about a lot. And I think in the early days, we were probably, a bit close to the line sometimes. And it took a lot of education. It takes a lot of considered communication and ways of framing what you mean by performance to the customer. And I think something interesting has happened in the running space more broadly that we've been able to leverage, which is, I think, with the with Parkrun at one end of the spectrum and Super Shoes at the other end, the concept of running a PB and challenging oneself is now kind of common parlance. You know, years and years ago, I don't think people, your everyday person, was really aware of what a personal best was, or that they could go and run this 5K thing and try and achieve a faster time than they'd ever done before. So PBs became this thing that has become a normalized concept. People are comfortable with it and comfortable with the sense that it's something that just really relates to them. Super Shoes has also really shifted the perception of who can be a performance runner. And I think that's a big shift. You know, when I was working in Runner's Need 15, 16 years ago, there were everyday trainers and there were racing flats. And racing flats would be your absolute hardcore, whip it thin club runners. And that's pretty much it. You know, and even a lot of club runners weren't necessarily running marathons in racing shoes. But the birth of Super Shoes was a kind of line in the sand for saying, yeah, you can go on a performance journey. If you are on race day, whoever you are, that's a day when you put on your Sunday best, you put on those shoes that are specifically to go and do a certain thing. So that whole world has changed. And then we've just been able to really, really lean into it, I suppose. And I think something that we've really been conscious of is there's definitely a world in the UK where you've got traditional running clubs at one end of the spectrum that are really pushing performance, and then on the other end of the spectrum, and perhaps it's more of a circle actually than the spectrum, are what you'd say are running crews or clubs that are born out of the more social side of running. But I think both elements are actually becoming a bit more like one another, and I think that's been a really important place for us to lean into and to engage with those different types of runners. So I think traditional clubs are becoming really aware that to continue to prosper, they need to really up their content game, really make sure that their socials and their web offering and the way they communicate with members and things they offer to members is fit for purpose, for want of a better phrase. And then on the flip side, you've got running crews or clubs that were born out of the social side have had members say, actually, but I'm quite interested in getting a little bit faster or bringing my marathon time down or going a bit further. And they've already established really good content, really good storytelling, really good ways to engage with their membership. And they're just moving a little bit towards, a little bit more towards the inverted commas performance end of the sport. And this is kind of a very long-winded set way of saying that for a brand like Saw, we've got to kind of have a boot in both camps and try and unite them.
You said a couple of times on this episode, and for our listeners, Rob's also said it to me more than one occasion on calls, that Saw are not the biggest company in the world. And I'm not disputing that, but I would say you're a big company in your own lane. You know, you've done a lot of things that a lot of brands can't do. You're very trailblazing in a lot of areas. So I would almost dispute the fact whether you're a big company or not. I understand that when we think about companies and global companies, straight away we start to talk about budgets and turnover and things like that. From your job in marketing, budget aside, what have been the biggest challenges in 7 years? And when I mean that, I mean, what have been the biggest challenges in getting it right for what Saw want to achieve?
I think the biggest challenge is finding the right people or right platforms to tell our story to the right end consumer. And what I mean by that is because we can't go and spend millions of pounds hope that some of that works, we've got to be pretty clever. We've got to box clever about who we work with. So we've got to, fewer bullets, if you like. So we've got to say and identify, and it could be YouTube channel, it could be a podcast, it could be traditional print media, it could be an event. It's about saying, okay, of all these people that exist in the running world in the broadest sense, who are the ones that are going to get us in front of the most relevant runners and people that are going to respond to our brand and resonate to our messaging? And I think over the last 3-4 years, I think sort of post-COVID, we've got better and better at that. And we've really started to understand the kind of channels and the kind of places that our consumer and our customer engage. And I think it's been about getting that right. And I think in the early days, we probably weren't as precise as that. And look, I think the market's changed as well. Like some of these places where we do market and channels which we market via probably didn't even exist 7 or 8 years ago. But you've got to position yourself to take advantage of the opportunities. And I think that's been the biggest challenge. But I think we're getting it right now.
So later in this episode, Rob, I want to talk about tech. I want to talk about specification, innovation from the brand. I mean, I want to go into a few specifics around some of the kit that I've been wearing, because I'm really guilty, if you like, from my position. When I receive a piece of kit, I'll put it on and I'll be like, fucking hell, that's wicked, that. I ain't never seen that before. And then I'll be like, hang on, let me have a look on the website. Ah, that's why it's like that. I'm very guilty of not really doing my research, if you like. And obviously over the past few weeks, few months, if you like, I've done a lot of research through the website and I've learned things about apparel that I never thought I'd know about. So I'm coming for your job, mate. No, but in all seriousness, whilst Trackster and myself have been sort of plugging Saw and pushing Saw out there, one of the most consistent pieces of feedback that we get, and I've had even in conversation when I've not been wearing Saw, is the price point. Now, I want to talk about the price point because I'm that customer that you get what you pay for, and I'm happy to pay more money for something that's not just going to last longer, but do the job that it says on the tin. And I think that what Saw have done in the industry have proved that if a product delivers, the price point not is irrelevant, but it ultimately justifies itself. I think we've all been guilty as runners. And if you think back to your runner's need days, you try and save a few quid because something's cheaper and then it doesn't do the job you actually wanted it to do. So my question to you, Rob, is when you look at the price point of Saw, which is arguably on the more expensive side of things, why are our listeners that have never used Saw before going to get more bang for their buck, depending on what they get, obviously, from the Saw range?
Yeah, it's something that's come up over the years, but I think it's fair to say has decreased in frequency that it's come up as we've become more established. So in the early days, you'd get people saying to us, "Oh, runners are tight. Runners are never gonna spend a lot of money on kit. Now they're tight. They just want a finishers t-shirt and a pair of last season's Nike Pegasus and they're good." And that's just fundamentally not true. It's a broad church out there, and that's the same in running as it is in any other sector, any other sport. It also underestimates the sort of intelligence of the consumer and the runner. And I think we've got to a stage now where people understand that if you want a great product, that comes at a cost, for better or for worse, and that's in the fabric sourcing, that's in the construction, that's in the design, and that's in all these elements of the supply chain that fundamentally actually still involve lots of humans, lots of process, lots of research, lots of development, lots of testing. And when you think about all those small elements that go into to create, say, a pair of marathon shorts or a race vest, all of a sudden you realize actually that 135 quid I think our marathon shorts are at the moment, actually not that much money. And I think much like the shoe market has led the way, I think when people receive product, they start to see the detailing, and it's a challenge for us selling primarily online, that actually weight is something that's really, really hard to translate from a screen to a consumer. You know, how a bonded seam might feel, or how an ergonomic sleeve construction or hood construction is going to differ from something that's just ill-fitting and loose and baggy, all those kind of things. When you actually get the kit in person, I think you've said this to me before, and I think most people will share this, it's better than you ever perceive it's going to be. It's better in person than it ever is just on a screen. So if you haven't tried Soar before and you think it is the price that's putting you off, I'd say give it a go. I promise you, I don't think you'll be underwhelmed in the slightest. I think you'd be surprised. I think it will be better than you think it is in terms of how it fits, it feels, how it presents itself. I'd say come and give it a try. And we're so confident in that we've got a bit of a plug here. We've got a 1 month guarantee, which is get your product from Soar, run in it for a month, and if it's not for you, send it back to us. And if it doesn't perform how you expect it to or want it to, and we'll refund you. No quibbles. And we get very, very few returns of that nature because people get it, they want to keep it, they believe in it.
Well, it brings us nicely onto the ad break. Normally we do this separately, but we're going to freestyle it. So yeah, following on from what Rob was saying, listeners, you can grab yourself a discount, 15% off the Soar website. Use our discount code. It's in the description for the podcast. As Rob says, you ain't going to know until you try it. And I won't repeat my exact words when I receive a bit of Soar kit, but yeah, it's just mustard. You got to try it. You'll know what I mean. As soon as you get a bit of Soar kit, you'll know what I mean. I'm a bit picky when it comes to kit. I'm even down to things like socks and that. Ultimately, if you're running marathons, you need things to be exactly how you want. You need to feel comfortable in the gear that you're training and racing in. But Rob, I want to talk about innovation. Where does it come from? I mean, I've got the Soar website in front of me right now, and I want to talk about this particular piece, but then lead it on to some of the other pieces as well, where I know that the technology and innovation sort of rolls over. Laser cut, ultra lightweight, a graphene pattern that reduces body temperature. I mean, mate, I put that on and someone told me about this graphene story and I was like, hey, what's that about? I went and read it and I couldn't believe what I was reading. I mean, I've never seen this level of innovation in just what I used to call just a running vest. Where does all that come from the brand?
Oh, yeah, it's mind blowing. It starts at the top. It starts from Mr. Tim Soar himself. So for those that don't know, Tim's got a background in a multidisciplinary design background, and he is passionately obsessed with fabric and fabric technology and innovation. So he's there at the trade shows. He's there researching. He's there crunching numbers. He's out there testing and wearing it himself. So it comes from him. That's where it all starts. And then from there, it trickles down into our product team, our development team, and the guys here that are, it really is. I'm still amazed and impressed in equal measure when I come to work, and just the passion in these guys, the excitement, the way their eyes light up when they'll get a new fabric swatch or a new proposed fabric from a fabric mill somewhere in Europe, or discussions with one of the factories that we use in Portugal or Italy. It's a real zest for it's a personal zest for improvement and doing things better. That's where it comes from. It's passionate people that live for it, and people that believe there's always a way to tweak, to adjust, to improve. It's that sense that nothing is ever final. You can always do a little bit more. You can always do things a little bit differently. There's always a new technology emerging that will eventually become sort of commercially viable.
And over the years, Rob, from the range at Soar, what has been your personal highlight moment that's come to light? And you've sat back and you've gone, that's the best piece of work we've done.
On a product basis, for me, it has to be the marathon shorts. And I think I'm obviously very lucky in my position that I get to try everything. I get access to all the kit. But for me, they've completely redefined what a running short and a racing short can be. I remember when I did my first marathon in, I think it would have been 2013, wearing like this really cumbersome SIS gel belt. It was just, like bits of Velcro, like buckles, packs on it, just to be able to carry your gels. The way we've integrated all that so seamlessly and so sleekly into a pair of shorts, kept the shorts still impossibly lightweight, used absolutely incredible fabric, laser cut construction, and taken something that's such a staple, such a classic, the split short, the runner split short, is through the ages, it's iconic, but just taken that into like the 21st century beyond, for me is the one product that that we really own, I suppose. And you see that with sales, you see that out on the marathon start lines. You know, so many people now, when it comes to marathon race, they wouldn't go for anything else. I personally go for the split short version. Some people, I know yourself, prefer the half tight, the speed short, the skin tight version. But yeah, that storage element, that integrated storage system for gels alongside just beautiful fabrics and a sublime construction, that's for me that does it, the marathon shorts.
Yeah, on the shorts, listeners, yeah, I wear the marathon speed shorts purely because I've got chunky thighs. I prefer splitties. I'm old school. I think they look way better. And anything for 5K, 10K, you'll see me in the splitties. But for half marathon and marathon, I have to wear the marathon speed half tight because, yeah, the chafe is not worth it. But when I've been wearing them, I mean, I don't know if you remember, Rob, but that shoot we did in Richmond Park for the first ever pair of the marathon shorts, do you remember that?
I remember it well. It was yourself and Dom Nolan. You must have done like a hard 10-mile tempo. It was pretty bleak conditions. It was sort of mid-COVID.
Yeah, that was a difficult day at the office. But I remember that was the first time I'd ever seen, yeah, like these like loops on shorts to put your gels in. And back in them days, I weren't running distances to need that. But now I'm doing the longer races. The first time I used them would have been Cambridge Half Marathon. And I was a little bit apprehensive. I was like, oh, that's right, I'll just carry it. That'll be right. But in actual fact, like, they don't move. You don't know they're there. And that is just something that you can just tick off of your list and not worry about when you're running a marathon or a half. But for our listeners, Rob, that have never used either the marathon speed shorts or the marathon split shorts, you get two loops on the front. So you got room for gels. That's on right. The front. And then at the back, how many can we get in?
Depends on the size of the gel. So when we first created the short, we used to say it was six gels. But I think now you've got brands like Morton have been able to reduce the volume of gels. I think you can get a few more in. I think you're probably looking at more like seven or eight storage capacity. So you've got two on the front on gel loops, and then you've got a big pouch pocket at the back to pop your gels in, ease of access. And then you've got a zip pocket that sits just behind the pouch pocket. Zip pocket, obviously, for your valuables, your phone key, something that that you're not going to need easy access to, like the gel. So six to eight, depending on the brand. But yeah, more than enough for a marathon.
Cool. You'll soon be able to get the weekly shop in a pair of the speed shorts at this rate.
Near enough.
I love that. I love that. So last few questions, Rob, and I've got a couple of, teasing questions. I don't know whether you're going to be able to answer them, but the next one's not as teasing. But what are SOAR's values? If you had to sum that up, what would you say they are?
Innovation, best in class, and running first. So for us, it's about taking what exists and saying, how can we do it better? How can we be ahead of the curve? What's next? How can we improve? Trying to be the best. Always try and be the best in everything we bring to market. And then, we're steadfastly. We're about running. We're a running brand. It's got to work for running. We're not a, it's really important. We're not a sportswear brand. We're a running brand for runners.
That brings me very, very nicely onto my next question. I'm going to name another brand that's newer on the circuit that is skyrocketed and is on a high trajectory, and that's On. Now, On used to be called On Running, and we're purely a running brand, but not publicly, but now they're called On. I found that out about 2 weeks ago because I kept calling them the wrong name. My question to you, Rob, is that you say they're running's first, and I love that. I think that's brilliant. But is there going to be a conversation where SOAR either outgrows the running market and can venture into your triathlon, your cycling, your duathlon, your trail running as well? I suppose that's probably not relevant because that is running. But do you reckon that'll ever come across the table because of how great the innovation and the kit is?
Never say never to anything, but certainly not in the short or medium term. And you mentioned trail running, so when I say we're running first, I'd sort of caveat that, I guess, with running in its broader sense. So for runners, that could be pre-run, post-run. We've got a Rain Mac, which you wouldn't go for running, but is derived from running technology. So I use that in its broadest sense. But yeah, you're not going to shorts or a SOAR swimsuit anytime soon. No. SOAR lifestyle stuff that's rooted in running tech, that's definitely a thing. I mean, but it's gonna be rooted in the world in the world of running apparel.
And final question, Rob, for Tracks the Podcast exclusive, can you give us one, give us something that we can look forward to that maybe not many people know about that's going to come from the brand? It might be in 2 years' time. Just give me something.
It's not going to be 2 years' time. It's going to be sooner. It's going to be sooner than that. And it's going to be a product that is only going to be relevant to a certain element of listeners to this podcast. But keep your eyes peeled for my wife calls them buns, knickers, ladies, skimpy racing pants that have a integrated marathon storage system coming this year.
God, what can you not do, you lot? So that's brilliant. That's excellent. That's a good little insight of that. And I think there's a lot of listeners, you're right, they'll be excited for that. It's just, again, it's ticking a box that runners are crying out for, isn't it? It's serving the runner, which I feel is what SOAR's all about.
Yeah, we certainly like to think so.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time, Rob. That's been a great episode, mate. And yeah, best of luck for the rest of the year. And I'm sure I'll see you soon on the running circuit.
Yeah, best of luck this weekend. We'll be following the tracker.
Oh, dear. Thanks, mate. I'll chat to you after the race. Thank you for joining us this week for another episode of the Tracks the Podcast, where we talk all things running, the highs, the lows, the ugly bits, and everything in between. Big shout out to my guest, Rob, for his time on the show today. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, please do leave us a review and head over to our Instagram at Trackster to keep up to date with everything that we're up to. I've been Lloyd, your host for the day. I'm going to now drive up north to Manchester. We've got a bloody marathon to run. So I'll see you next week. And fingers crossed, the Doms ain't too bad. Cheers, runners.